If this is your first time on my podcast, I explore the many different ways in which stories are told on film by looking at cinema from all over the world, as well as interview industry professionals. And I want to welcome back Vanessa Butino, who has been on my show many a times, talked about a lot of different kinds of films, but lately we've been talking pre-code. So Vanessa, thanks again for joining me on this one.
Oh, you're welcome. Let's talk about another pre-code.
Yes, let's. So I saw this 2 years ago by pure accident because I was watching Martin Scorsese's A Personal Journey Through American Movies, his documentary, which I've seen before. And I was watching it again because it's on Canopy. And he was talking about Wild Boys of the Road, which is also by Wellman, 1933. And I thought, I got to see that. And I got from our library system here in Toronto, the Forbidden DVD, the pre-code box sets from TCM to see Wild Boys of the Road. And there was this other movie on there called Heroes for Sale. Knew nothing about it, just generally read the plot and was absolutely floored. So was this your first time or had you seen it before?
I want to say it's probably my first time. If I've seen it before, I didn't remember it at all. So I'm going to say, yeah, it's probably my first time watching it.
Oh, so it was. Okay, great. So after seeing it, what did you think?
It's not my favorite pre-code. Okay, having said that, this is not a bad movie. It's not. It's just when you say pre-code to someone, you automatically think drugs, sex, gangsters. You don't necessarily get that with this film.
Right.
It does not feel, well, in some aspects, yeah, it does feel like a pre-code, but overall it doesn't. So to say this is one of the best pre-codes, no, I wouldn't say it is. However, it's a very good film. And the director, William Wellman, he was a prolific film director. He started off in the silent era, and his films, I feel that they're very masculine. They're very hard edged.
Yeah.
There's a lot of self-consciousness about them. And this film felt like it had everything in it.
Yeah.
There's so many different themes where you got World War I and the soldiers coming back to America after the fighting was over. Then you had, drug addiction because of the injuries that these soldiers sustained during the war. You had the Great Depression. Like, it just was one thing after another.
I know. It's actually incredible how much he put into this film in under 70 minutes. Like, I think if it was made today, this would be like a 3.5 hour epic. And he did it in a way which those, in terms of those montages, like you see him going into the prison at one point, you see him going into even a mental institution at one point, and they handled it just with like those cards, placing the card with the date he went in and then taking it out, and you know he's been released, and or going through the calendar and you see that he's been in there in prison for like, you know, 4 or 5 years. Even the trial is, you know, I can understand why he didn't show that trial when he got arrested for like falsely accused for leading people to, you know, smash machines and cause riots and, you know, murder took place and assaulting and, you know, assaulting police officers. And you don't really know why he got blamed, but you just know, well, you have an idea, but you just know that he got blamed. He got thrown in jail. And it's not really gone into because there's so much in it. what would you say even throughout all of this story and all the context within it, would you say that there is a through line? Is there an essence to it?
I think that the essence of this film is the social commentary and the social consciousness. One thing that I broke my heart about this movie is you had these men come back from World War I, and many of them had injuries, whether that be physical, emotional, or mental. And they were just essentially treated like garbage.
Yeah.
If you didn't have a medal of honor of some kind, you were just, yeah, okay, you came back from the war, okay, go find a job and get on with your life, okay, but you know, some of these men are, most of these men were damaged, and it's the way they were treated was horrible. And towards the end, when
it still happens now,
yes,
the suicide rate with people coming back from war is like, is insane,
because they're not treated fairly. Even that, they're not even recognized for what they have done for their country. There was one scene towards the end of the film where there was a group of men, some of them ex-soldiers, people who fought and served in the war, and they're on those trains just essentially hitchhiking to find work. And the group of men, they're hiding under a bridge because it's pouring rain and they've got a little fire going, and a cop comes up to them and calls them, I think he called them hobos or something like that. And you have our main character, Tom, speak up and say, we're not hobos, we're ex-servicemen. We fought for this country. And they're essentially ignored. That's the one thing that really stood out to me in this film, regardless of whatever else was happening, because so much happened in this film. You're right. That was the one sticking point for me, was how these men were treated when they returned home.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that really popped out to me as well. Everything from, you know, getting hooked on morphine because he got shot.
Some of these soldiers, you're lucky if you even got morphine, because there was a huge shortage during the war with all the injuries that were occurring.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, these men were shamed for having this drug addiction, but really, what was the alternative?
And even, you know, his manager at the bank, like, was so ignorant to say, like, well, he's back from the war, get a job. Like, the war is over. Like, just no empathy. And of course, you find out at the end that that guy killed himself and was a crook and was bankrupt. But you certainly see this element of cowardice, because, as you know, from watching the film, the son of the bank manager was one of his fellow veterans, and was afraid to go and capture the enemy, because he was afraid he was going to get killed. And of course, Tom went and captured him and got shot, and he thought Tom was dead, so he took the Medal of Honor, so to speak, of capturing the enemy. I'll give him credit that he did try to say it wasn't him, and they just thought he was being, you know, humble, and they just celebrated him. But that guy really was really quite the coward. Even later on, when he doesn't defend Tom, he doesn't back him up with his father. You know, Tom tells his father exactly what happened. You know, and you can understand why, because of the way he was being treated by the bank manager, and the guy has no empathy for what he's been through and that he needs help. And he just, you know, that guy just calls him a dope fiend. And it's just, it's so heartbreaking to see that even your fellow man, your fellow soldier, you know, is going to put himself before you. But there's so much of that behavior in this film. I mean, it's not just, you know, we see the police and people, you know, throwing people out of trying to find shelter. Again, this is relevant. We see that today, even in here in Toronto, people are, you know, camping out because they're homeless and getting kicked out of, getting hit, getting pushed around and treated like criminals. And it's amazing to me that this film from almost 90 years ago, it's those exact same themes. I mean, it's amazing how much we constantly repeat history again and again, but there's so much in this. Did anything else pop in into you that was a real kind of soul, heart and soul of this film, or do you think it was really just a lot of different, you know, aspects and behaviors and social commentary, as you said?
I think that the other things, there's two things that really stood out to me, aside from the point I mentioned earlier. So the first one is that the director of this film, William Wellman, he was an ex-serviceman as well. He did serve in World War One, and he was a fighter pilot. So I think Wellman directed a number of films where the war features in it. So here's a guy who's directing a film who has seen combat firsthand. He knows exactly what he's talking about and exactly what he's directing in terms of him making a film in this particular period. So the opening sequences of this film, Heroes for Sale, were incredibly moving because they take place in the trenches of World War One, and you're seeing battles and you're seeing men fall. And it just, can you imagine what it must have been for Wellman directing this, looking through the camera, seeing this happen in front of him all over again? To me, that really stood out and was really touching. And Wellman went on to direct quite a number of films. And I think his most famous film is Wings from 1927.
Right.
That silent film. And it was about the aviators in World War One. But Wings was the first movie to win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
I didn't even know that.
That's a fan. If you're a fan of war films and in particular silent films, I would recommend Wings. It's fantastic. Anyway, so the second thing that really stood out to me in this picture as well was you're seeing blood on screen, and not during the war scenes. You see it in the rioting sequence where I don't want to spoil this for anyone, but you see Loretta Young, who is Tom's wife, just try to rescue her husband, pull her husband out of that riot. Ultimately, she doesn't reach him in time, but she is knocked out, and you see just a splash of blood all over her face, which I found really jarring because you usually don't see a lot of blood in early Hollywood cinema.
Right. Yeah.
So
I don't know if in the pre-code films they could show much blood.
I mean, could show blood, but I mean, in comparison, if you compare that scene of Loretta Young being knocked out and blood all over her face
to
the earlier sequence during World War One, where these men are being shot at, but you don't even see bullet holes. Like, you see nothing. They just fall.
Right.
So that was really like, whoa, did they just show that?
Yeah.
Because you're not used to seeing that level of violence and blood in a film of this era. So that was really, whoa.
Yeah. That, you know what, that quite shocked me. And that was the scene after that was so devastating, because this poor guy, you know, Tom, who's already been through so much, more than most people go through in their entire life. And now in that moment, he gets arrested for a riot he didn't cause, and his wife gets killed. And when his son is crying and asking where the mother is, and they have to lie, that just devastated me. I mean, those scenes with his son, they all really devastated me. I mean, just every single time he had to say goodbye to him again. Of course, you saw at the end, he had to go on the run again. It really broke me. But what I loved was he was really proud of the father, which you saw at the end. And he really, you know, I think the film is quite hopeful, because, you know, you see that even as Tom says, maybe it will be the end of us, but it won't be the end of the country. And the fact that it ends on the boy's face, I really took that as hope for the future, you know, because I mean, the one quality about this, and it really stood out to me this time and the last time I saw it, was the resilience of this guy. I mean, he really is like a Christ-like figure, because I think he, I mean, it's melodramatic in a good way. I mean, in terms of he goes through horrendous things, getting shot, going to prison, getting, you know, mental hospital, wife gets killed, thrown out of the city as a serviceman. No one cares, you know, treated like just absolute garbage. And he never breaks, you know, it's an interesting way of, and it's very hard. And I know from myself, things that I've gone through and things that I've seen other people go through, it is so hard to accept when things go bad. And this goes so bad for him in so many ways. And even in the end, he's a total, you know, I mean, the guy, he's a soldier, says, oh God, you're such an optimist. And he doesn't see it. I mean, he doesn't see it as optimist. He just sees it as the reality is like, it's not, I'm not just being, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, we might be over because of what the depression, what's going on, but hey, there's, you know, Roosevelt in his inaugural speech is right. Like one, I forget the exact quote, but a knock on the jaw can't get the entire country down. But then he's like, just looks on the bright side that it stopped raining. I mean, it's just like, this guy is an extraordinary character. So did that resilience really pop out to you? I was curious what you thought.
Yes, it did. Yeah. And I think during the time this film was made, so it was probably made in 1932, released in 1933, you're in the thick of the Depression.
That's right. At the worst of it.
Yes. So I think audiences of that time were looking for some glimmer of hope, for something to hold on to. And I think this film, when it came out, must have really touched them. It must have left a lasting impression on film audiences of that period, because this is exactly what they needed to see. Yes, the majority of the film is just gut-wrenching, and it illustrates how poorly these men were treated when they came home from the war. But there is that speckle of hope littered throughout the film.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you're right. The fact that this film ends on the young boy's face saying that my father is the best man ever or something like that. It's real, true hope.
Yeah.
And audiences must have really related to that.
No, I well said. I totally agree. And what I, you know, the kind of movies I love that I consider art are the ones that have the most value in the way that I can now live my life. And what do I see in this behavior that life can be like this? And I don't mean that we should all go through what this poor guy goes through, but what can you do when things are so bad? And if you look at the behavior of this guy, and people have done it in life, you know, you look at Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, Jesus Christ, you know, it's these kind of characters, Gandhi, you know, they're very, they accept the situation and they're optimistic and they go forward. They don't let it, when they fall, they get right back up. Again, easier said than done, but it's something to strive for, you know, and I think that is of great value. I mean, I think if I were perhaps directing it, you know, sure enough, yeah, you can add on another 40 minutes here where we maybe saw more of his rage or not accepting of it and maybe other things in that prison and exploring more things about his, I mean, because he's more one dimensional, but I don't mean that in a critical sense. I'm just saying I could see that it had potential for maybe going deeper into that. But I love it for what it is. But it's just it's a really wonderful message. Absolutely. I was curious what you thought, because, you know, we talked about social. Certainly there is a lot of social commentary here, but Wellman doesn't frame it in terms of like how we look at things politically speaking as, oh well, that's left wing or that's right wing, because he certainly. Anyone who's quote unquote socialist communist in this film, a red or quote unquote a capitalist, they all are very flawed. I mean, the guy who's like the Lenin supporter, he's part of like the comic relief. And he was also in Babyface. I'm not sure the actor's name. Perhaps you might know him more. I can't recall his name. I'll have to look it up. But, you know, he's like a pure communist. And then as soon as he gets rich off his invention, he goes totally the other way. And he's like, he's all about money. And he's just a total sellout. So, and then at the same time, he shows a guy who you would think would be like this capitalist thinker, like they're the boss, who like wanted to give everyone good wages, even after they make that invention in the laundry business that they're working in. So their hours can be shorter but he's like, no one can get fired. And you know, that he's a good boss. He writes it in the agreement. And then, you know, sure enough, once that guy dies, the next guy, of course, that's when all the trouble starts, scraps the agreement and fires everybody. But he's not just saying these are the good, these are the bad. I think he's saying like whatever political, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Political beliefs you have, or wherever you align politically, you know, you're not necessarily right, and you're not mm-hmm. necessarily wrong, and that no one knows really what to do. That we're all just human, and we're not these like two separate, you know, teams, as politics often is. You know, did that pop out to you? I was curious what you thought about that.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's no left or right. It's more of where you fall on the political spectrum.
Right.
There's a lot of different factors. Then you may believe one thing one day, but then the next day, when you're in the middle of a depression and you lost your job, or you've made a lot of money while everyone else around you is starving, yeah, your beliefs could change on the flip of a coin.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And yes, that this film illustrates that perfectly. Right. Where towards the beginning of the film, you have that supposed to be a comic relief character where, you know, they're for the people and no one should have a lot of money and down with politicians. But then in the next frame where he's rich, now all of a sudden he's for the capitalists. So right. Yeah, your opinions could change very easily depending on your life and your role in society. So
absolutely. And it's funny how he found the humor in that, because that there is something funny about that people are so hypocritical. Those people in the laundry business, they end up being on the front cover of pages as a quote unquote radical left communist reds, because they're like going into industries and breaking machines. But they're not doing it out of any kind of political belief. They're doing it out of anger because they've been kicked out of their jobs. You know? Yes.
Yeah. They're doing it as their way of surviving.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they lost their jobs. And if you have no job, how are you going to support yourself or your family? They're doing it as a matter of survival.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, often as divisive as a world that maybe even more divisive now than I mean, I don't want to say ever, but it's, you know, we're seeing extremely divisive times. And I think this film has so much value to show like we have to stop putting each other in these pockets and teams mm-hmm. of left versus right, because we're all people. Like there's these labels can only go so far, you know. Yeah. I think this is something that's really, really important in this movie. And again, as much as we're talking about this, Vanessa, I think how is this only 70 minutes? Because
That's Wellman for you. Wellman was an excellent, very concise, to the point storyteller. The majority of his films had low runtimes. Wings didn't. Wings was, I think it was 2 hours plus, I think. But he directed a lot of pre-code films where there was a lot of story to tell in a very short amount of time. And you know what? He managed to do it. Yeah. Not all films need to be 2 hours or more long. They don't need that. Right. All you need is a good story, a good storyteller, and an excellent cast. And that's it.
Well, that's what's so incredible about that is that he also makes it so emotional. And I think it's because every single scene is so life or death or so urgent. And yes, they have their share of incidents and they're incident driven, but they're not driven by a superhero who has to save the day and explosions and fantasy. They're driven by the realities of war, the realities of mental health, the realities of drug addiction, the realities of going to jail and communism and capitalism. And it's like, oh my God, like it's an exercise in life, or so to speak, but it's extraordinary. And I think, of course, his use of montage. I don't know how you feel about this. I usually don't like montages because I feel that they're cutting through the emotion and getting to the point. However, they sometimes are necessary if you have a story where it extends in a long period of time. And some montages I absolutely love, like the one in The Graduate, for example, in the middle with Benjamin Braddock. Like it is extraordinary artistic montage of a lot that happens in a period of time. But in this case, he makes it work on an emotional level as well as telling a story that is like, you know, 15 years, really. It's like the war until World War One until the Depression. I mean, it's extraordinary. I think he's a guy that needs to be studied more. Do you know, in pre-code circles, is he someone that is often talked about a lot, or is it less so? Because, you know, you said something interesting off the top that you don't think about these kind of movies because they don't have those themes that we associate with pre-code. So I don't know. I'm curious if you hear his name a lot just in the pre-code conversation.
Who, Wellman?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. So, oh,
okay, great.
When I hear William Wellman or directed by William Wellman, I automatically think war films. I automatically think aviation, because that's where his passion lied. And that was his background in the war. He was a pilot. And I think of films like The Public Enemy, which he directed, Night Nurse, Midnight Mary.
Oh, wow. Totally forgot he did Public Enemy and Night Nurse. Wow.
And Midnight Mary is one of my favorite pre-codes ever. Wow. Wellman was prolific. And he's not talked about as much as other film directors of the period. Like, for instance, John Ford, George Cukor, George Stevens, Alfred Hitchcock, Victor Fleming. Wellman isn't spoken about as much. And I think that's really sad because he started off in the silent period and went on to direct films, I think, into the 1960s. So he did have a remarkably long career for someone of the classic Hollywood period. And his films were always so impactful. He was a fantastic storyteller. So I'm glad we're talking about this film today, because I think people need to or should dive into more of his work. I think he deserves that, definitely.
Yeah, it's just blew me away the first time and the second time I saw it. Just the last thing I wanted to say was I really liked the relationship with the woman who ends up taking care of his son, because his wife was killed. And the irony is that she actually was interested in him. You saw, I love that. And it's told visually and very briefly when they're all getting ready to go out and she sees, Tom and his wife with his arm around her. And then she just makes an excuse not to go out. And you see that she's, you know, hurt. Or jealous. And the irony is, of course, that she became his mother, really. So she assumed the mother role. And, you know, at the end, she asks to kiss him. And I just thought, again, it was so emotional. And so you can't help but feel for that woman. I don't remember that popping out to me as much the first time as it did this time. Did that really stand out?
Yeah, it did. And the reason why it stood out was because that role was played so beautifully by Aileen McMahon.
Yeah, she was great.
She's a fantastic actress. I think in a lot of early Hollywood cinema, you have films where there's the other woman and you're supposed to hate that other woman because she's trying to come between the main characters, the two main characters, the female and the male. In this film, she does essentially play that same role as the other woman, but you don't hate her because, first of all, the role is written beautifully and it's played beautifully. Yeah. It's played with real emotion and tenderness, and there's never the threat of sex involved. It's just pure admiration and pure love. And I really, really appreciated the way that role was written and played by McMahon. I think she did a fantastic job.
Yeah. No, I agree. I thought, I mean, at times, not her, but as we know from this, this era, you know, a lot of these actors were, like, you know, on vaudeville, or they were in the silent era. So everything was much broader. And even the actor who plays Tom, at times he was quite broad, I felt, and over the top, but he has this perfect face for him because he looks like he's been through hell. And that's really what the character is supposed to look like. So it's, you know, he had to, in a way, he had to do so little because his face just spoke volumes. But I thought that she was great. And who the comic relief, the communist turned, what's his name? I you know, I know he was the husband. It's
Robert Barrett.
Robert Barrett. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, he looks so different on his IMDb picture. This must be like a really young shot of him. But he was really, really, really good. But yeah, of course, back then you saw that in the acting. It was a little more, you know, you can feel that they're just waiting for their line, or they're acting on their line. Yeah. But there were, you know, some really good ones. And yeah, for her for sure, Aline McMahon. Yeah.
Yes.
She was a real standout, I thought. I thought so as well.
And she was so versatile as an actress. She could play these really heavy hitting emotional roles like she does in this film. But then she also has fantastic comic timing in films like Gold Diggers of 1933, where she's just a riot.
I still have to see that.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's a great pre-code. Fantastic.
Yeah, I have to see that. But yeah, she clearly went on till, yeah, the 1970s. I'm just looking at her IMDb. So she had a pretty lengthy career. Well, this is a great, a really wonderful film. And you can see it for free on archive.org, or it's on those, the Forbidden Hollywood TCM DVD box sets or Blu-ray box set. I want to thank everyone who's a Patreon member of mine. I have a pre-code tier where I have a newsletter dedicated to what I'm doing every month in terms of learning more and more about pre-code or what I plan to review, as well as a Hitchcock tier, an Italian cinema tier, and a film noir tier. So the link for my Patreon is in the description box below. And there is an audio version of this podcast now as well. And you can find it anywhere that you get your audio podcast, Spotify, Amazon, places like that. And it's absolutely free to subscribe to my channel. Please consider doing so, as I'm trying to monetize here. The Robert Bellissimo at the Movies logo, you will see it right here floating above my head to your top left. Just click on that and then click the bell in order to get a notification every time I release a new video or when I go do a live broadcast. And Vanessa, thanks again. It's always a blast. It's always a treat to have you on.
Oh, it's always a blast. You're right. I love being here. So thanks for having me back.
No, thank you. And I, you know, I'm forever grateful for you and Raquel as well, getting me really interested in pre-code movies. So please come again.
I sure will.
Okay, great. And we will see everyone in the next video.
Bye.